When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You think about the person in your life when you started believing you more than anyone else. They're the ones that made the sacrifices. When I walk out, my old man's next to me. They're not just looking at you, they're looking at what made you. I want them talking about our fucking game. I want them talking about us. All right, enjoy your lunch.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and a man who's thoroughly back on the dribbly winger hype train, it's Nathan Lee Clark.
Hello, Nathan. Oh, we are so back.
Put the word out, Nathan. We're back up. And why would that be?
Because there's a teenager in Belgium that we're after.
And not even for now, for the summer. We will definitely be coming back to that. Firstly, apologies for getting it wrong about our defensive set pieces. Of course, it's Mile Jedrnak who is responsible for our defensive set pieces, as Ange told us earlier in the season. Mm. Thank you to the many, many, many people who told us that we were wrong on that. Appreciate it.
We weren't wrong, Windy.
No, well, I was wrong.
I wasn't for once.
And also a shout out to Josh Newmark and his dad, who has set up an Ange car alarm. So when he locks his car, it says "Enjoy your lunch, mate." And I think that is genius. I don't know when it'll get old, but I really enjoyed the video. Thank you, Josh. That was fun. We haven't got a game to talk about this week, so instead we're going to do some transfer stuff. But before we do that, I did a Windy's Youth Update pod for the Patreon over the weekend, which was good fun and a bit of a throwback. So I don't have my ear to the ground quite as much with the youth teams right now. I don't go and watch them live, but Spurs Play has made it very easy for me to still follow the youth team. Nice. So I've been catching some under-18s and under-21s, which has been fantastic. And also, since two of our young players joined Plymouth, I watched the Plymouth game over the weekend to sort of do a bit of a scouting report on Alfie Devine and Ashley Phillips, which was interesting. Did either of you guys catch the Plymouth game?
No, I didn't, no. But I'm interested to hear. I'm interested to hear what Windy thinks about Phillips.
Mm. So we've had quite a lot of Phillips discord, haven't we? Because Nathan said he didn't feel that Phillips was ready for Premier League football because he's not good enough on the ball.
Yeah,
That was certainly my reading of Phillips for Plymouth. This was his second game. I would say Ashley Phillips is a really good passer of the ball. He is. He picks good passes. He weights them well. He plays clever passes. The problem with Phillips is he's not good in possession. He's very stiff and awkward in possession, and ends up kind of telegraphing what he's going to do next. And I think Premier League strikers who are adept at pressing will find that quite easy to play against. That said, he's a pretty solid defender, and I think he's doing a really good job. And he's 18. You know, he's a really young player. Centre-backs mature quite late, typically. I think we're onto a winner with Phillips. I think he's a really hot prospect. But he doesn't have the Van de Ven hips.
Hmm.
He doesn't have the Destiny Udogi kinesthetic ability. He has the Eric Dier stiffness. And that is something he will need to work on over time if he's going to make it for a ball-playing team like Spurs. Really impressed with Alfie Devine. He got an assist on his Plymouth debut. It kind of looks like, I don't know, he's a level above a lot of the players on the pitch. They were playing Cardiff, so Cardiff have a handful of good players. And across the 22, it looked to me like Devine was the sort of outstanding creative player. He was a little sloppy at times with some of his passing, but when he's carrying the ball, he does it with purpose. He means business. He's really a very intelligent user of the ball. And yeah, I like this move for him a lot. He played on the left of a two behind a front man in a 3-4-2-1, a bit like the old Conte formation for Spurs. And yeah, I really liked what I saw.
I think maybe he, or maybe some relevant coaches would say that the Port Vale loan was useful for him in some way. But to me, he was always, you know, he was ready for the Championship. And I don't think a bit of League One has made him any readier. And as you say, he's already standing out in a Championship team against Championship opposition, right? So
I listened to him do a sort of goodbye interview for Port Vale's social media, and it was clear how much affection he had for Port Vale and how much he felt he learnt sort of on a personal level. So I think there's, even if from a football perspective he didn't learn a lot, I feel like he's grown as a person from being there, and I think that is in itself good.
Sure.
But I do think we've made the right call in getting him back and putting him back out at a higher level. Really pleased to see how we're managing our loans.
Yeah.
I think that sort of proactive approach has been missing for a couple of years, and I'm delighted it's back.
A lot of players out on loan at the moment, and more that we're looking for. Good to see, yeah?
Absolutely, yeah. We've got 7 over 21 players out on loan and 3 under 21, sorry, 4 under 21s.
And
out on
as
loan
you say,
right now,
switching up if it's not working in the first half of the season, not just letting them sit there dormant and wasting a season of development, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Tanganga's been called back from Augsburg and will go back out, I think. Spence has come back.
And gone
back out to Genoa. And Devine, obviously, Dane Scarlett's come back because he wasn't getting game time. So I really appreciate the fact that Spurs are doing this now, and that's a real positive move.
Didn't Tanganga go to Millwall?
Sorry.
He went to Millwall, no?
Yes, sorry, you're right. He's gone back out to Millwall and he made his debut for them. Yeah, he made his debut coming off the bench. That level, he's going to be too good for that level, but you know, he needs that. He needs that boost, I think, at this stage. Before I move on, I also talked about our youth players, and I just wanted to briefly touch on the players who I think are our top 5 youth prospects at the moment. And I won't include Devine just because everyone knows about him, and I think he's already, you know, he's a Championship player already. He's kind of made it to some level. So you know that I rate Donnelly and Dorrington very highly. They're both in my top 5. The other 3 are players that people might know a little bit less about. Firstly, Tyrese Hall, who is a central midfielder, brilliant ball carrier, really good presser, good finisher. He scores a lot of goals for the under 18s, absolutely ready to step up now to the 21s in my view. And I think he will once some more loans happen. And he's really exciting. Leo Black, who is a right back who essentially plays the inverted right back role for our under 18s because he can play midfield as well, but they play with one inverted fullback and he's the one that does that, and it works out really well for him. Again, excellent ball carrier, likes to play in tight spaces, likes to have lots of neat interplay with his teammates. So really well suited to what our first team is trying to do. And I think he's definitely one to watch for the future. And finally, Mikey Moore, who a lot of people will have heard the name. Not too many would have seen him play. I just think get Spurs play for the back end of the season and watch a couple of under 18 games so you get to see Mikey Moore play at that level, because he's a really exciting talent. He's kind of got everything. He can play a whole variety of positions, and I just hope we get this one right, because he should be a gem. He's got everything in his locker to be an absolute gem for us, so fingers crossed we develop him properly. He's 16, so it's a way off yet, but definitely one to watch.
Awesome.
Bardi, you are working on a podcast as well.
Yeah, we have a really nice running fitness and exercise community on Discord. It's one of the kind of benefits you get if you're a patron. There's runners in there, there's climbers, there's footballers, there's serious athletes like speed merchants like Dan, there's newbies, and there's plodders like myself.
And me.
and Nathan and his leggings that he shared a nice photo of his leggings the other day. So there's quite a little bit of a community there. So I was thinking about starting a X-Sub special run, push, pull podcast where we'll talk to a range of different kind of people. So if you're a physio, PT, dietitian, coach, or an instructor of any sport, drop me a line. I've already got a running coach lined up to come in and talk about how you start running, how you improve your running. And yeah, we're going to look to do that because there's a great community there and we're always asking each other questions and we kind of realize we can't always work out the answers. So that's what we're going to be doing coming soon.
I felt really good about, because I had a cold, so I've been off the road for a few days. I felt really good about getting back out there, getting another run under my belt, building up that momentum again. Last night, it was dark and it was wet and I was like, I'm going to do it anyway. I've got these new leggings I'm going to put on. I've got this new bobble hat with an inbuilt head torch. What I didn't know is that there was a storm going on and the trees were like swinging back and forth and creaking and cracking. And I was like, oh, I probably shouldn't be out here right now.
Good headwinds. If you get it behind you, you could do some good times.
Yeah, and then I've got to go back the way I came.
Yeah, I went.
Bit of resistance.
I went for a club run on Sunday. It was a trail run. There was meant to be like maybe 15 people running through the trails. I turned up 10 minutes early. I was like, "Where is everybody?" 5 minutes later, still no one there. Anyway, got the day wrong. So, New Year's resolution: always check dates on events. Just don't turn up. So, I did a nice little run through Woburn. If you know the area, it's a beautiful place to run. Deer and geese and all kinds of stuff.
Very nice. And the reason we're talking about 18-year-old Norwegian wingers, Nathan, is because it seems as though Spurs want to tie up a deal for Antonio Nusa, who I think a lot of people have heard about because there's a lot of hype around him. But you finished your video.
Yeah, well, I haven't finished editing it. I recorded a video on Nusa last night. Oh boy, I can't remember. I wonder, sorry, quite a few times recently, a player has come to my attention for a role that I think we need, and I've talked about them, and I've done some content on them, and then later we've been linked. I think that Nusa was probably the other way around. I think we might have been linked very vaguely in the summer, and that brought him to my attention, and I was like, oh, okay, this guy rocks, and now we're like really going in for him this time, it seems. So I think that the club were first this time around, But boy, what a special, special talent Antonio Nusa is. Not to spoil the video, but he absolutely rocks. He's 18, and he's already a very, very special player, in my opinion. I'm trying to talk about him without giving up too much of what's in the video. I don't know what else to say or not say.
Stylistically, who would you compare him to?
So previously I have compared him to Zaha, and the reason I've done that is because both him and Zaha sometimes utilize a very low, very wide gait with bent knees, and they use that for manipulation, change of direction, disguise. And both of them are good at being able to dig the ball out from them, from like when the ball is underneath you in a low squat. When you see a centre-back get in that position, it's like it's game over. Like, they're in trouble. But both Nusa and Zaha before him are good at digging out the ball from underneath them in those situations and playing like a pretty powerful cross from what is like a kinesthetically difficult situation. The more popular point of comparison has been to Neymar. And because, Norwegian Neymar, it's fun to say. But like, I get it. And that's quite dangerous and scary to put that label on an 18-year-old. But like, but I get it, right?
I don't want to get down about this, but is there a fear that he could be like, De Ketelaere was like a big thing coming out of the Belgian league who ripped it up. And then he's been okay. He's been all right. Bad first season, better season this year. Is there a worry that we may get overexcited like perhaps people were with Gift Orban in the summer? I don't know.
I do think people were overexcited about Gift Orban, who was massively overperforming his expected goals and has now gone back the other way and scored one or two in his last 10 or something games and is now going to Lyon for a moderate fee by the sound of things. I think people were correctly excited about Charlotte de Ketelaere. I think things didn't work out for Milan because sometimes things don't work out for you and the system of football that they're playing there might not be the best for him. Doing pretty well at Atalanta right now, right? So I think he'll probably come good in the long term. It's certainly true. It's certainly true that just because you're good, and in my opinion, basically too good in the Belgian league doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be outstanding in a top five league or the top one league right now, right? And certainly when you look at Kompany at Burnley and the work that he did in the Championship in the Premier League, a lot of the strength of the Championship was him recruiting well from the Belgian league.
Yeah.
And they were very technically strong and they got over 100 Championship points, and then they moved up to the Premier League and those same players are now at a talent disadvantage to Premier League, right? So there is definitely a leap between Belgian football and Premier League football. So I get that. You can't be certain. You can never be certain. But he passes the eye test, man. He really passes the eye test. I guess, like, you know, at 16, he was too good for Norwegian football. At 18, he's too good for Belgian football. Therefore, yeah. You know, age 20, too good for the Premier League. Age 22, too good for the Champions League. Age 24, greatest player of all time. That's my projection. Yeah.
I do quite enjoy Burnley, but you're right. They've been put together and they're a bit too young and too soft. But I do think he's got some things right. I really, obviously, because he's Italian. Colioscio, I love Colioscio, and I'm really upset he got injured because I thought he would have made a run for the Euros. But if you guys are happy about Nusa, then I'm happy about Nusa. But I do think it's funny how for years you've been going on about a dribbly winger, and now it's everything everybody talks about with Tottenham is dribbly winger this. Oh, it's the key, dribbly winger this, dribbly winger that.
Yeah, and I think that, like, because I felt like this role that we need has got to be, they can't be a squad player, right? We misstepped with Solomon, in my opinion, because we went for a decent option, an okay option, a cheap option, whereas what we need is, like, a lock. Someone who's going to come in and just immediately be the first choice and able to play most games. And that's why I've said, you know, why most of the time I'm like, let's look in that region of 15 to 30 million. There's lots of good talent there, under-scouted players, non-top five league talents. My opinion with the 1v1 specialist, the winger, is that we should go for Nico Williams. We should inquire about even Kerry Mittema. We should look at Pedro Neto, right? Because we need a first 11 quality player. Obviously, having never played in a top five league and being an 18-year-old, Nusa is more towards the prospect side. But he's so good that I wouldn't be shocked if he's pretty quickly at that level that we're looking at, that I'm looking for a first 11 quality player.
Nice. And the suggestion is that we will buy now and loan back. And the idea is we buy now because there's so much competition. Mm. And if we don't buy now, we might lose the opportunity.
Yeah, this, and again, this is something to talk about in the video. I don't think he needs the minutes desperately. I don't think he needs to develop technically or tactically. So I don't think that was the case, in my opinion, for Saar. He needed more minutes, probably. And then, like, Udogi, probably it was right for him to get some more loan minutes. Whereas, like, I don't think Nusa is going to benefit hugely from another 500 minutes in Brugge. But if he wants to stay and he wants to see the season out at the club that he's at, then that's kind of cool. And if it's what separates our bid from Chelsea's bid, from Liverpool's bids, then great, because we'll be okay for 6 months without him. So from that perspective, that makes sense. Where I do think he needs to develop is physically. And so that, in my opinion, means time in the gym rather than time on the pitch.
And we were just talking about Charles de Ketelaere, who plays for Atalanta. And Spurs this past week have been linked with his teammate, Ederson, who plays in midfield.
Oh, have we?
And seems to profile similarly-ish to Conor Gallagher. What do we think of that link?
Huh. This is one where I've said, oh, I think this is a good player for us. And then a week later, we've been linked, as far as I'm aware. Yeah, this is interesting. So I did a thread on Eights, and we spoke about it the other week. And I mentioned Ederson. He's someone who's previously had minutes as a number 10 at Atalanta, but is really more at home being a number 8. And what I essentially said about him is, like, if we were a normal team, if we had a normal setup, if our coach wasn't a lunatic who played like 7 attackers at all times, I would definitely be looking at this guy as like a first choice number 8 in a normal system, right? Because, like, defensive work is really strong, physical game is good, great technical, gets up and down, and he gets shots, right? But, like, It doesn't really get much better in terms of shot production than Bentancur does. So if we're looking for someone to come in and play number eight, and the idea is that Bentancur is going to be the number six, Adison's kind of another Bentancur. And I don't really know what that really gives us in terms of, other than just obviously depth of quality, and that's great. And I'm not, you know, maybe that's just a straight up improvement on Højbjerg, improvement on Skip, a second Bentancur. But in terms of like the diversity of profile, I'm a little surprised, unless we think that his shot production is going to shoot up in a, but it's like not like Atalanta don't play attacking football, you know?
Yeah, that is really interesting. Because I think Gallagher does, if you're saying that Ederson is basically Bentancur, I think Gallagher does profile slightly differently, yeah, in that I think he's slightly more creative than Bentancur. There have been various other links this week, but I think that Noos is the big news. And I do think incomings at this stage perhaps depend on outgoings. And so if outgoings happen, then I think the links will hot up. But in terms of outgoings, we've seen Perisic go on loan to Hajduk Split, and we expect him to join them permanently at the end of the season.
Yeah.
So we won't be seeing Perisic again for Spurs. We've already spoken about Devine. He's gone to Plymouth on loan. There are also links with Emerson Royal and Al Nassr, Brian Hill and Lazio, which could be a loan at this stage. Højbjerg, again, is being linked with a transfer out. Sessegnon is being linked with a loan out. And Alfie Whiteman is being linked also, according to Alistair Gold, with a loan out. The idea of Emerson Royal going created an interesting topic of discussion in the Discord earlier. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about that partway through the season, Bardi?
I quite like the idea of selling him and getting as much money back as possible, but I do think it leaves us a little bit short. I was thinking, who do we play if something happens to Porro? But then the kind of drop-off in quality is so big from Emerson to Porro. Does it really matter if Emerson's even there? So I think 30 million is good money. If we can do that, then get rid of him. But I am concerned about cover.
Yeah, there's been reluctancy in the Spurs fan base because Royale's sort of done okay at right centre back and played some minutes at left back and can also kind of cover right back. Obviously, is his first position, but I think we can do better, and I think we've got a third centre back in now. So yeah, I'm definitely not opposed to selling Emerson Royale, and I think that then we look towards improving our depth of fullback in the summer. In terms of dealing with Saudi Arabia, I mean, previously what I said was that, like, I've got serious concerns about dealing with a government who bomb innocent Yemeni people, but that's us now too. So, you know.
Indeed. Yeah. I mean, where do you draw the line?
If we sell Emerson now, who steps in for Porro? Who takes over in case Porro is injured? That's my only worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, your options would be to play a centre-back.
Yeah, move Romero there, I think, is what I would do.
I don't love it, but I think it's an option. Or you play utility man Oliver Skip and hope that he can kind of hold an offside line and know when to tuck in and go back out and
not get obliterated 1v1.
Yeah. Which might be tricky. Or I guess you play Ryan Sessegnon on the right if he's fit and available, or Ben Davis or whatever. But I don't love that idea personally. Brian Hill, it appears suddenly that we've decided he is available for a loan. Having previously said we wanted to keep him unless we got an offer for a permanent move, in which case we would release him. But Lazio wants some short-term loan cover, it seems, and Brian Hill might be allowed to join. Why do you think there might be a sudden change?
Well, we're linked to Noosa, but then we're not going to probably see him until at least next season. I think we've probably realised that he's just not up to it physically, basically, and he needs to go to a continental league. I reckon in the summer, a wrestling match between Noosa and Brian Hill, and then whoever loses gets released from their contract, and I'm leaning towards the 18-year-olds against the 22-year-olds in this situation. Because, yeah.
No, don't tell me Noosa's little. He's not small, is he?
He's not huge.
Oh, great. He needs to start lifting and eating some chicken.
Yeah, he does.
You'll be pleased to know he's very fast, though, Bardi.
Great.
Which I don't think Brian Hill is.
Yeah, but he's tenacious. I've always admired his tenacity and his willingness and his ambition. He's too small. He is the FIFA generation Jose Dominguez. He's just can't cut it in terms of strength.
He's a good player, you know. There's definitely a talented player there, but I just think the intensity is just a bit too much for him.
I just think he needs to remodel as a central midfield player. I don't think he's good enough on the outside 1v1. I think he is quite good at connecting with players around him and good at drifting into space and obviously a very good presser. So if he makes himself into a central midfielder, I think there's a player there, but it doesn't seem like he's good enough to compete with our central midfield options right now.
Was the previous comments on us not wanting to allow him to leave on loan before we brought Werner in?
No, I think it was after Werner. Yeah. I mean, I guess it could be that they've had a look at Solomon back in training and decided that that he can offer more than Brian Hill.
Yeah. I think so. I think Solomon's a far better option than Brian Hill. I don't see it. And I don't even see him becoming a central midfielder, like doing a David Silva or a Bernardo Silva and just being... I just don't think his ability to retain the ball under pressure is that good. He'll be a middling winger for somewhere on the continent and he'll do all right. Good luck to him. But yeah, he just didn't develop at Spurs.
Yep, like so many before him. Højbjerg, we've spoken about so many times, but I think if he leaves now and we get a replacement like Gallagher or like Hiddison, I think the majority of the fan base will be very happy with that and see that as a significant upgrade, particularly now we've seen Bentancur play some minutes at six, where previously we thought Højbjerg might be the only reasonable backup to Bissouma. Sessegnon's a funny one. I mean, it does make sense to get him out on loan and get some minutes under his belt and then reassess in the summer. I think most people have given up on Sessegnon by this point. His body is just not up to it. But I don't see the downside of doing that. Kind of makes sense. And then Alfie Whiteman, my goodness, why is he still at this football club? Just for the love of God, man, just go out and play some football. Like, honestly, what are you doing? You're wasting your career away. You're 25 now.
He's 25. Wow. Yeah. I mean,
it's nuts.
Been hanging around Harry Kane. He's played.
Probably get an offer from Bayern soon.
Who was Bayern have now been linked with Kieran Trippier? I don't know. I think what's happened to their data? Is it all been corrupted? Something's gone wrong.
I think.
How can you have a defensive line for like this modern team that has intentions to win the Champions League with Harry Kane up front, who just is brilliant but doesn't move, and then Dyer and Trippier is also part of your defensive setup?
I think that they're going to have a really good go at the 2017 Europa League with that combination of players.
Hey, did you know that Old Trafford the other day, Timo Werner became the fifth German to play for us in the Premier League era? This is a little bit of a Bardi's brain buster for you. Can you name the other four Germans to have played for Tottenham Hotspur?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I know three straight off.
Go on.
Klinsmann. Yes. Jürgen Klinsmann, Stefan Freund, mm-hmm. Christian Ziege.
Yeah.
Now, does Kevin Prince-Boateng count as German?
Oh, I didn't count him as German, no, but yeah, he was, well, he was technically, he was German when he joined us, and then he swapped allegiances, but he never was capped, obviously, at a proper FIFA game. And I hope you're not Googling, Windy. I just saw your fingers moving.
Lewis Holtby.
Well done. Mm. They're the four Germans who, so team of owners number five.
Oh, okay. And that's everyone.
I was Googling which country he'd switched allegiance to, Kevin Prince Boateng.
No, Ghana.
Ghana.
Sorry, Ghana.
I couldn't remember what it was in there.
There is one more German, which I felt I couldn't include because he only had one game for us, and it was in the 1908 season, which was, I don't think there was stats around in those days, but his name was Max Seberg, who we signed from Chelsea. So there you go. There's a bit of history repeating itself there. He ended up becoming a pub landlord somewhere. He was arrested during 1914 because obviously he was German and they didn't trust him, but then they let him loose. And he ended up seeing out his days as a pub landlord in Reading. So there you go. They're the six Germans who appeared for Spurs. Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. And to show how simple it is, I'm going to break character and use some stats. Hey, Windy, do you know how many people on average stick to their New Year resolutions?
I'd guess that maybe 20%.
No, my optimistic little buddy, it's far less. Only 9% of people on average stick to their plans, and that because quite often we set ourselves unrealistic goals. The best thing to do is make a small change with a big impact. AG1 is one of those changes that I've made, and I've stuck to it through Jose, Nuno, my manager Conte, and now my new guy, Big Ange. It's a simple scoop, shake, and drink resolution that's part of my life, just like dropping the best and the hottest takes. I like simplicity, I like the eye test, and I like it nice and straightforward. And that's what AG1 is for me, a change I can sustain. Go make a change, go get AG1, mate.
If there's one product we had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1, and that's why we've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/extrainch. That's drinkag1.com/extrainch. Check it out. Andrew Elliott, who is AC Elliott 79 on X, says, how seriously should we take the FA Cup? And I think that is a really interesting conundrum. At the time that Andrew sent that to us, we were having a bit of a rough patch and we'd struggled to win. And I think the point of the question was, well, now we ought to prioritise it above all else. And obviously since then, things have turned and, you know, we could win the league this year. if we really like get it together, like there's no reason why we shouldn't be challenging for the league. So where do you think we should be placing the FA Cup in terms of priorities?
I think that with only two competitions, we should be playing our first 11 in both competitions and we should be able to afford to do that. And we have not the best depth, but actually, we're getting so efficient in our recruitment now, you know? So pretty quickly, the depth is coming along. If you think about like how many like successive windows in a row there's been a gaping hole in the first 11, window after window after window, and we've never really had quality of depth. Finally, we are like recognize the problem, create a list of potential players, coach picks favorite or vetoes ones he doesn't like, and we get the deal done. It's just like we're operating on a totally different level to how we previously operated. Again, yeah, fullback depth isn't there, centre back depth. I'm still a tiny bit worried about Dragusin's passing. We'll see. Midfield's coming along, and we'll get there with it. And I guess also the coach's use of like second string players. Like once you're out of the first 11, you aren't just written off to history. Like you can come back in and have an impact as well. So depth is really coming along. Maintaining cardio levels for the full 90 minutes has been an issue, but I don't think that playing the FA Cup games are really going to have too much of an impact with that. I think if anything, it can kind of help build that rhythm and help us rotate through the where we do have our quality of depth. So I don't see any reason, and obviously we've played the Burnley game. I don't see any reason why we can't be playing first 11, or, you know, obviously there's kind of not an actual first 11, but match specific first 11s for both competitions, and getting my boy Richie his 15 goals.
I think it's really unfortunate, obviously, that we drew Man City this early in the in the cup, especially this playing the game this week as well, with a game Wednesday, then a game early Saturday. It really hasn't helped us. But 100% we should be taking this serious, play our best team against Man City. I think Haaland might be on the bench from what City is saying. Edison definitely won't start, but he doesn't start anyway. De Bruyne will probably start, which isn't great. But, you know, eventually they're going to score at White Hart Lane. They haven't. They haven't yet. But eventually it's going to happen. It's going to be a good game. I would love us to win it. And I always think there's certain moments in every kind of cup run where you think if you get through this one, then the ribbons might be on the trophy. And this is definitely one of those games where we can get through Man City. I would love us to win an FA Cup. It was part of kind of defining moments of my childhood. People who are my age, that FA Cup run in 91 was one of the best things we've ever seen. I would love us to win it again.
If Werner starts that game, which I imagine he will, does his best Sonny impression, scores two goals in an absolute XG thrashing by City, and then he's out injured for the rest of the season, he's successfully done his job on this loan, hasn't he?
I don't think Ange is going to low block and counter his way to this game. No. It's going to be really open. It's going to be a great game.
I think so.
I am nervous about it though. Very nervous.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like as much as when the balls came out, it did suck a bit at the other City. I kind of got used to the idea, and now I think actually it might be the perfect draw, because either you lose and then you just focus on the league and hopefully keep players fitter, or you win and then you've knocked out the best team in the competition, and you've really got a chance to then be the best team in the competition, the one that everyone wants to be. And I would really fancy our chances if we were to win on Friday. So I do think go as strong as possible. Hopefully that means Madison's back. That'd be a nice bonus. Really intrigued to see how we look with, playing as well as we are, but with Madison back in the side. I think that's a very exciting prospect. The Werner Madison link up will be interesting as well. Johnson, I don't think, has played with Madison yet either.
But you're creating a problem for yourself now. You are creating an issue, because if Madison is back, then Kulusevski, I guess, would deploy him right, and Johnson gets dropped.
And Werner starts.
The good thing is we went to Etihad and we had Davies and Emerson at centre back. So we got a foot up. There's an improvement there. But so we'd play Bentancourt, Madison and Skippy, I guess, would be the three.
I'd go Højbjerg. I'd keep Højbjerg at the six, and I'd play, or maybe I would play Madison, Kulusevski, Bentancourt in midfield. And that sounds insane, but like, I'd rather that than play Skip or Højbjerg, I think.
Yeah.
I like it. So while we're on the subject of midfield, we've got several questions about our midfield. Let's start with this one. So Ephraim White says, if everyone is healthy, who is in Ange's midfield three when we play Arsenal, Liverpool and Man City later this season? So let's assume Madison's back. Let's assume Bissouma is back and in one piece. Let's assume Sarr is back and in one piece. There's quite a few options developing in midfield. What midfield three do you go against Arsenal, Liverpool and City? And is it the same for each? Is the other question.
I think it's probably the same for each. Yeah, I think it's probably the same for each. And I think that it is Bissouma, Bentancur and Madison.
Yeah, I think that's my pick as well. And I really love the sound of that midfield. And obviously the prospect of having Sarr on the bench and being able to bring him on for the final half an hour or whatever is very exciting as well.
I think that's it. And then you've got the rotation option where if Bentancur's not working, you swap Sarr in. If Bissouma picks up his yellow, you swap Bissouma and Bentancur around, bring in Sarr. And Madison is also interchangeable with Lo Celso and Kulusevski. It's the, I think we definitely need, if we're in the Champions League next year, we definitely need one more, because if we keep Lo Celso. It could be your Gallagher.
I think one more if you keep Lo Celso and two if you don't. And I suspect he will leave still. That's my gut feel. Alec Depkrinsky says, watching the team since Madison's absence, I think a lot of our issues in attack and controlling the game flow are down to not having another player like him in the squad. Early in the season, he would routinely drop into pockets near the fullbacks and centre-backs, collect the ball and progress it forward, either through decisive passing or direct running. We simply don't have another player like this in the squad. And I think that has become clear in his absence. And I think we've coped pretty well on the whole, considering the other injuries as well. But Nathan, is some sort of Madison rotation a priority for you in the summer?
That's tricky, right? Because Kulusevski has played really well in that role. Lo Celso has played well in that role. But I also completely agree with Alex's analysis that Maddison gives us something that neither of those players do, which is ability to move deep, move into a fullback area, take the ball on the turn, take, you know, 10 consecutive touches and dictate the tempo and progress the ball for us in that manner. So I definitely agree with that. I definitely think Maddison's going to give us a lot when he comes back. But it's also like, if that's vital, if we need that, and we're not getting that from Lo Celso, we're not getting that from Kulusevski, we're not getting that from playing, you know, skipping that role, what are you going to do? Are you going to get rid of several of those players to bring someone in who profiles more like James Maddison? I think we have to accept what Kulusevski does give us in that role, accept what Lo Celso, if he stays, does give us in that role, which is certainly more than nothing, except what Donnelly can potentially, you know, in the future give us in that role, and adapt around their different profiles.
I mean, it's Maddison's, he's just so smart. He's like, he knows when he needs to drop in to give an option to move the ball out. And then he's just able, he's got the legs and the kind of movement to be able to move up the pitch and then put himself somewhere else where he knows the ball needs to be. And it's just something that he has mentally, something he has physically, and just no one else in our team has that to that degree. Lo Celso shows moments of it. He really does, where he just understands the need to be somewhere on the pitch. And that's what we've really missed. And the fact that he just can just open himself up both ways and fling the ball out left, switch it right. He's an ambidextrous midfielder, man. He just opens up the whole pitch for us, and it's brilliant when he's playing. And we've really missed that.
And this is why I've sort of come around on Conor Gallagher, because I think if you have, you know, either Bissouma or Bentancur as deepest midfielder, and then your two eights, as it were, are Maddison and Gallagher, both of them can come towards the play, both of them can operate in deep areas, and both of them can push ahead of the ball and offer different means of playing ahead of the ball. So you can be super, super flexible with them, because obviously we have seen Maddison come towards the ball and, you know, Saar most of the time pushing up. But he's not super comfortable playing ahead of the ball and moving and operating against the opponent's offside line and things like that. So that is, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if we were to bring in Conor Gallagher, or I guess another similar profile, if we kind of saw much more of a 4-3-3 and a little less of a 4-2-3-1. I know that's an irk for you, as it is already, Windy. And a lot more of Maddison getting on the ball deeper.
I like the Gallagher move for kind of covering some of the Maddison skill set as well. So in a similar vein, Connor S says, say we manage to get Champions League next year, for argument's sake, touch wood, taking into account the homegrown regulations, who would be your ideal six or seven midfield options for the season? So I think we can assume that we'll have Bissouma, Bentancur, Maddison and Saar as four. I think we probably all agree that Højbjerg, Lo Celso and Skip, if we have any of them, like, it will be one of them probably.
Most likely Lo Celso,
I think all three might go. That would leave us needing two, probably three signings. I think Alfie Devine will probably be part of the first team squad, personally.
But also Kulusevski can come off the wing and provide depth for Maddison, right?
So Bissouma, Bentancur, Maddison, Kulusevski, Saar. That's five players. Add in Devine, that's six.
But
do we need one more, two more?
Then I'd add Conor Gallagher in. And you've got a pretty strong coverage across the board, right?
I mean, that is a really strong midfield combination, isn't it? Yeah, there were times where I'd look at Liverpool's midfield 2 or 3 years ago and I'd think, God, I would love to have the amount of options they have in midfield and the ability to sort of change players out and not lose any quality. And I look at Liverpool's midfield now and I think we are better than them. Like, we've got a better midfield than Liverpool. We've got Højbjerg and we've got Skip. Bradley, what are you thinking? Are you happy with what we've got?
I haven't seen enough of Devine to say whether or not he warrants that position. I like the options. It would be nice to keep Lo Celso when he plays. I like him, but it's the fact he's just unreliable, and maybe we should cash in. So yeah, Gallagher would be a good addition to that. I'm not sold on him, but we need passports, man. So get him in.
So we touched on Brennan Johnson just then. We had a question from Petter who says, are Spurs fans worse than other fans when it comes to targeting our own players? For example, if I were Nusa, an Arsenal fan, by the way, God, I didn't know that, and was watching the treatment of Brennan Johnson, I'd think twice about signing. But I guess idiots are everywhere.
There are idiots.
And this is
everywhere,
in relation to the fact that, this is in relation to the fact that Brennan Johnson has turned off comments on his Instagram because he was getting so much abuse from his own fans, which seems a damn shame to me.
Every set of fan base is as bad as each other. I don't think there's a fan base worse than another one. I think we've all done it. I've never directed any kind of abuse at your, I don't even know if, is it, do I abuse your EBA? I don't know. I don't think so. I comment on his performance and I don't like it, but I wouldn't abuse him. He seems like a really nice man. I think the abuse Johnson gets is just a combination of people being able to demonstrate it. The visibility of abuse is so much more now. I don't think it's right. I think he's a good player who's trying to settle in at a club. But I don't think it's any worse than what other fans out there are doing, what Arsenal fans are doing to their own players.
Yeah. I don't really use Instagram. I certainly don't use it for commenting on our players' posts. I haven't seen it. I don't know. Because to me, I've mainly seen pretty positive comments on Johnson on the social media that I use, like on Twitter, on r/coys, on our Discords. Those are the three places where I discuss Spurs, basically. And people seem largely pretty positive, right? So I sort of don't know. I do wonder, is it definitely Spurs fans? Is it definitely Spurs fans? Is it people saying things that could be construed as being Spurs fans or not? Is it people pretending to be Spurs fans? You know, which is not to say that Spurs fans don't do things like that, because of course, and Buddy's completely right. Essentially, the bigger the fan base, the more dickheads. And the dickheads will scale as a percentage of a larger fan base, but they will always be loud, regardless of how small they are. So essentially, the larger the fan base, the more dickhead exposure you get. I don't think we can beat ourselves up for having dickheads in our fan base, and it's very hard for us to police our own fans. I hate it. I think it's stupid. I think it's ridiculous. I think I'll comment something on a player and it might be something negative, because again, that's not abuse. That's us doing our thing, right? And then someone will tag that player under my tweet and say something much harsher. It's like, what are you doing? Why would you do that? Who is that for? Why do you need to tag them? We both know who we're talking about, because we can understand what a name is. What are you using the tag feature for? Mm. I get it.
I think the behavior of football fans, or some football fans on social media, really reminds me of being back at school.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if you guys had those situations where it sometimes felt like groups of people just picked someone every week as their target for that week, and they would just go in on them at every opportunity. And you know, you might have one person who was a ringleader, and then everyone else would join in, and that person just felt completely ganged up on. And it kind of came from nowhere often a lot of the time. And I feel like this is what's happening with Johnson. It's people had a perception of what he was and is, and Spurs spent a certain amount of money, which perhaps was in their heads reserved for their favouritist player in the world, and it didn't get spent on them. And now they want to go for Johnson because he's the reason their favouritist player in the world did not join Spurs. And others just join in because it makes them feel better in some way. And it feels very unpleasant. I saw, it's not just around Johnson. I saw a post last night that I found really depressing, that it got loads of likes, and loads of Spurs fans beneath it were saying, just sending cry laugh emojis. And it was a post about who'd won the most trophies or something. Mm-hmm. And then some Spurs fan had made just a random misogynistic comment about Declan Rice's partner. And it was really unnecessary and unpleasant, and just had hundreds of responses applauding it and cry laughing at it. I was like, what are we, this is literally schoolyard behavior. What has society become where this is seen as okay?
But I think
it gets cheered on.
You're closer to the truth than you realize. And I think that we forget as adults that a lot of these profiles on Twitter that are named after a footballer and have a footballer as the profile picture, they're just kids and they're just teenagers. And because of the the anonymity of it, we forget that they're just kids and that what they say has no bearing and no importance. And the fact that they have, you know, 8,000 retweets on a misogynistic or abusive or whatever comment doesn't mean that it's worth anything. It just means that they're gaming the algorithm to spread their crap, and they've bought a verified account and stuff like that, you know.
And they're profiting from it. This is the thing. They're literally profiting from
it. But this is a problem with the platform rather than, you know, the overall Tottenham community.
I don't think it's... the behaviour has remained the same, because back in the day, Vinny Samways came to Spurs and he was called Vinny Sideways, and he received a lot of abuse and everything else because of the way he played. He wasn't very up and at him, and he was a very Latin midfielder who turned up in the first division that liked to whack it up the field, and he got abused for that. Ian Wright, who was in this film, I watched The Kitchen the other day, and Ian Wright popped up in it as a kind of commentator of it, and he was really good in it. And he used to get loads of abuse from us about his partner as well. So we did the same to them, and it's the behavior has remained the same. But before, it was kind of isolated to maybe a pub or the football stadium. Now everybody's got an opinion, and everybody's able to broadcast that opinion. I don't think fans have got worse. I think probably as the fans in this country anyway, I think there's been a general steady of improvement despite what we saw recently in the Championship about some racist remarks and stuff. I think on the whole, football fans have improved. It's just social media has given people the voice to do and say stupid things. And I think that's the issue.
And I do think that what Brennan Johnson's done, turning off comments, is the right course of action. Like, there's just no need for him to see that. And if it's not him, like if it's just his team or whatever, again, there's just no need for them to have to see that kind of vitriol. So switching off seems like a very sensible approach to me. But I do hope he knows that on the whole, Spurs fans are 100% behind him and want him to succeed. You know, there's nothing I'd like more than Brennan Johnson to become, you know, the next Gareth Bale for us. It would be so wonderful. And he seems like a really, really nice kid. He did some really nice stuff for a homeless charity around Christmas. He seems like a good person. And the idea that he felt that he needed to switch them off, I just think is very sad. A sad indictment of our fans online.
It's not even been that bad, man. He's been good. There's been worse players who've been clapped and supported over the years at Spurs who've done less than what he's done in his time. He's clocked up a few assists. He offers something. Yeah, his final ball can be a bit wonky, or sometimes he lacks confidence, but that's stuff that I believe he can fix in time.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Barney, and our tactics guy, Nathan Aklar. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/TheExtraInch. Production is by Nathan Aklar. Our logo, artwork and website are designed by Creighton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram at David Lindmer. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. And most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the ex-subs. We love every single last one of you. And of course, come on you Spurs.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.